Welcome to a new episode of the India Independent Films Podcast. This is Rahul Desai. We are back. I have with me, as usual, Uday Bhatia, film critic for Mint. We've survived the last 10 days. I know we did like a pre-Mami podcast and we got a little nostalgic about previous editions of the Mumbai Film Festival. This is a post-Mami podcast. As promised, we are going to be discussing our favorite things of the festival, whatever we managed to catch, our experience of the festival. Happy to report that Uday and me resumed our pre-pandemic routine of Mami, except this time it was a little scattered around the city because BKC was a center, but we'll talk about that soon. I'm also happy to report that we have continued the tradition of one of us falling sick during the film festival. In Kerala last year, it was me. This time it is Uday again. But the good thing is he recovered within a day and did not let any of that spoil his movie watching schedule. Very impressive. Uday?
Yeah, I think I may have exaggerated a little bit on that one day that I got sick, because I kind of tweeted my mommy was over, but... As it turns out, it was only very high fever and a cough for one day, which completely went away. So I think it may just have been that I didn't ease myself into the festival at all, but instead did like a fairly brutal first day at Regal, which was like really long. So maybe I just needed to acclimatize a little bit and I didn't do that. So I'm guessing it was just like a bunch of that rather than...
Look at us speaking like, you know, we've taken a trek up to Everest Base Camp and we didn't acclimatize properly. because I do remember your first day, because I think you were like 6 in total, 2 shorts and 4 features, which is great because it took the pressure off me instantly. I was like, okay, this is definitely not no contest here, because I missed whole of first day. I was reviewing first half of the day and second half, I had like a Q&A and I had a bunch of, and I went for the opening ceremony. So yeah, I think you got a little, as is expected, after 4 years of no Mami, I think you went for it in the first day, but yeah, thankfully you bounced back before, like me last year also.
You had a bit of a rough time with your lead up to Mami. I mean, we were all busy, but yeah. I think you were insanely busy, but also you came back from your Euro trip fairly late. So I'm guessing it all kind of just blended into one crazy thing as soon as you landed back.
Yeah, it was one of the greediest and most foolish things I've done in a while, because logically how I was thinking is, okay, I'm going to be back 3 days before Mami, so I'm not going to miss Mami. I'm going to have fun and do our usual, what we used to do, like 30 films on an average before that. And what absolutely escaped my mind was the fact that because I was away for so long, I definitely could not take any more days off, at least in terms of reviewing films. So as soon as I landed, I realized I had like 4 films to review, including a Scorsese that week, which was 2 days before Mami. And then, of course, when Mami started, there was a lot of traveling to and fro, because as I mentioned before the festival, Uday and me both were involved in curating. So we had a bunch of Q&As to do, most of them around Bombay, not exactly at one place. And because of that, you know, I had to sort of plan my schedule of movie watching was secondary to me, honestly, for the first day or two. So it was crazy. By the time Mami started, I was almost retired, hurt, because I hadn't slept for a while. I was still a little jet lagged. I was like totally overworked. And I also had to do a couple of reviews during Mami, not of Mami films, but, you know, regular stuff, but you know, just another week in our lives. So I'm just glad that Mami was 9 days instead of 7 this time, gave me time to at least also take it a little easy and catch up with one or two big titles I was really looking forward to by the end.
I did manage to catch quite a lot of what I wanted to. Couple of big misses maybe that we'll get to. Quite a happy Mami after the the last one, which I completely missed because I actually did fall sick there and missed the whole thing. So that was very much in my mind when I had that one day of sickness out here, but it thankfully did not turn out to be dengue or anything like that. What was like some of the first films that you caught at Mami, which was like the first really good film that you kind of caught this time?
So basically my Mami started a day later, so I think I spent the whole day at the NMACC and caught all three screenings there, just like you did Regal the previous day, I think. I think you were also there that day on Saturday.
Yeah.
So my first film was Fallen Leaves, which I am very glad that it was my first film. It really eased me into the festival because it was really enjoyable, really deadpan, very typical Finnish film. Of course, you having just gone to Helsinki saw a lot of your locations in that film. And it's very nice little sort of deadpan romance to start off the festival. And it as I realized later, nothing could have topped that first day, because the second film I watched was Monster, Kurida's Monster, which was arguably my best film of the festival. And then we followed it with Anatomy of a Fall at night.
Okay. And which was basically a really good first day then.
Yeah, that was a great first day. So, though, I mean, all three, Fallen Leaves, of course, slightly lesser than the others, but like Monster really woke me up to the festival. And I was like, if this is the quality, I'm going to have a great Mami. And I was very moved by Monster. As I said, you know, it's like if Kurida made Close. It's just, and I understand later that it is best screenplay winner at Cannes and all. Very deserved. It moved me because of, I think it moved one of my best experiences. This Mami was coming out of the NMAC theater after the Grand Theater after Monster. And I reached 2 minutes late because I was doing a press conference before that. So I just got into Monster on the upper level and watched the film from there. But by the time I got out, I could feel just this rush of emotion and things that we missed for a while watching like a very good film together. I felt like a lot of people came out with their wet eyes and very moved and choked up, needing time to breathe, not because of what Monster is about, but because of, I think, one of the rare instances, because they were so moved by the craft of it and so moved by the fact that they did not see it sort of unraveling the way it did in the last 15 or 20 minutes of that film. Because, you know, we know it's like it's three perspective of the same sort of event. And it's one of those things where we've seen this thing done before, the Rashomon thing, but I don't think anyone's done it with so much clarity and so much just so much subtlety as Kurida did. And I wasn't a fan of Kurida's last film, Roker, which we watched at Kerala last year. In fact, yeah. I was going into Monster thinking that, you know, he better get his mojo back. And oh man, Monster, one of my favorite things was seeing everyone's faces after the screening. It was lovely. It just felt like we were back at, you know, a film festival.
I was also, so this is something I was noticing in quite a few screenings of at Mami, and it's generally a problem in screenings in India, and like that people feel the need to fill in silences with something, and it's the idea that you can just keep quiet and appreciate something doesn't really compute for a lot of people. So either you're cheering or you're like clapping or you're laughing. And there are situations where things are like chuckle funny, but not laugh out loud funny. But a lot of audiences didn't really seem to see that, you know, have that distinction out here. And in the early part of Monster, there's like a lot of people laughing. And I was just like, you know, I knew the film was going to shut them up really hard. Because it was moving in that way. It just, you knew that something was going to really like constrict, and there was going to be something dramatic happening, which is not going to be funny in a really short time. And I just feel that this is something about Indian audiences, that they are not their viewing of films has become very performative and very like almost geared towards showing, like, even if they are like quote unquote good audiences who are appreciating the film, it's very much geared towards showing other people that they, you know, they understand what's going on and they appreciate it. So this was something very irritating. It was there in the on the first day in the Hamaguchi film, Evil Does Not Exist. And that's not even like a funny film. Like, it's obvious that in that, and I really liked that film. And it was obvious that something was going to like go really wrong at some point in there. And it just, I don't know, it was weird. Did you also have this problem with some of the audiences?
Yeah, that's a good point, because I saw a couple of cinephiles on Twitter also sort of touching upon this. And I did notice a very different sort of watching. Like, I noticed, for example, this, what you speak about, is absolutely true, and the performativeness of it, and basically sort of not really grasping the film so much as wanting to show that the film watching experiences. And that nervous energy thing is a very Indian cultural thing, because it's like, right, when people don't know, people are faced with something uncomfortable on screen, their first reaction is to laugh and diffuse it with their own sound, or with the sound of a chuckle, almost like hoping that if they laugh, the film might just get funnier or darker or something like that. And it's we are an escapist society in general, and that tends to be reflected in the way we watch our movies. I saw that in Anatomy of a Fall that night itself, because there were people laughing at the weirdest things, because that film, you know, there's that, you watched it, right? Like, there's this entire sort of showdown between...
I saw a Regal show later on, yeah.
Yeah. There was that, remember the showdown sequence between, we see in flashback eventually between the wife and her husband, and in the kitchen, and yeah, and while they're listening to recording in court, she sort of all imagines it. And that sequence, one of the best sort of scripted and performed sequences, it puts Marriage Story to shame almost. And it was so intense. But there were people chuckling during some of the things the wife was telling the husband, you know, like when she was sort of almost mocking his beta masculinity. It was very weird, because it said so much about the audience or the people who were laughing than it did about the film. There was nothing funny about that. It's a wife sort of almost, you know, traumatized and thinking about sort of reminiscing about a late husband, and it was a very intense sequence. I didn't see anything funny, even if angry people or angry characters tend to say unwittingly funny things to each other while they are arguing. Overall, it was anything but that. So I didn't have the bandwidth to chuckle, because I was holding my breath during that sequence. And if the wife said something funny, and if the husband reacted a funny way or said or sort of said a funny phrase, last thing on my mind is to laugh. You know, it's everyday life, because we tend to, if someone else watches us from the outside, they might just find it a little amusing, but there's nothing funny about being in the moment. And I think that's lost upon a lot of movie watchers. I saw this change during this film festival, because a lot of people, shockingly, were taking out their cell phones and recording stuff. This has not happened in previous Mamis. I've seen it happen in Salman films and Shah Rukh films and Hindi films in general, where everyone wants to show they are watching the film before everyone else, and they have to put it on social media. Why were film festival audiences, whoever they are, taking out their phone during the opening credits or during the entry of a famous actor or the director's credit, taking it out and recording? I saw the amount of times a multiplex employee had to come to them and, you know, embarrassingly tell them that, stop, this is illegal, you cannot be doing this. This happened a lot during this festival, and it was really annoying. I didn't see this in previous festivals.
It was really, it was spectacularly annoying. And there was this film, which we saw, Four Daughters.
Yeah.
Fantastic documentary. We got a couple of recommendations from people whom we knew, including Ishita, who should be here on the podcast. I don't know why she isn't. They had told us that just go see it. They didn't tell us any details, for which we're very grateful, because every surprise in that documentary it just landed so well. It was such a smart thing, and it just hit so hard. I mean, it would have been a great documentary without some of the revelations that come later on in the film, but with those, it's just unbelievable. It had competed for the Palme d'Or, and if I'm not mistaken, I think it won the documentary prize at Cannes also. Which is it shared it with a film called The Mother of All Lies.
Even that was playing at Mammy, I think. But yeah, Four Daughters, very grateful to like Ishita, because I think she watched it first day of the festival. I think it was her first film.
That's a good start.
I was very, like, it's very difficult to talk about a documentary like this without really giving it away. And I think that suspense was really maintained for us by the time we watched it. Four Daughters, I think the first reaction, a lot of people I was talking about the film later on when we were sort of recalling our favorite titles of the festival, and Four Daughters is definitely one of them. I think a lot of people had the same reaction, saying we did not see that coming. And now, if you do not wiki this film, do not IMDb this film, because in the synopsis, in the first two lines, you will read something that will ruin your experience of it. I don't know who wrote the synopsis. That's not the way you're supposed to sell this film. Four Daughters, the lesser you know when you go into the documentary, the better it is. Very much seems like a dysfunctional family, sort of typical clash of generations documentary at the beginning. Very smart framing, like non-fiction within non-fiction. But you know, one of our favorite titles of the festival, definitely.
But I was just saying that right at the end, the person sitting next to me decided to film the last scenes of the film. And she was crying also. So she's obviously moved by the thing, but she's also filming it. I was gonna yell, and then I was like, you know, she was also sniffling, and I felt bad. I didn't want to scold someone who's obviously moved by the film, but it's so irritating. It was like right in the last scene, and she starts filming the thing. I do not understand how this has become acceptable behavior. It is insane to me. It's unbelievable that this could happen. The only time I have seen it happen before at Mammy was during, I think it was a screening of Man with a Movie Camera, and it had a live band along with it. And the person
was understandable.
And, you know, so at least that's something happening. It's a live performance. You want to film that and put it on video and all. It's irritating, but that I can understand. To do it for other films, do it for something like Four Daughters, which will objectively not make any sense to anyone seeing it in a little clip filmed on someone's phone. It's ridiculous and terrible behavior. And I mean, they started putting a warning at the beginning of the films in the festival, saying that do not record, and that can only be because there must have been so many instances of people recording and putting it on Instagram or whatever, that they had to put that thing, not that it stopped people.
I mean, when did it sort of become normalized? Because, you know, things, clearly something has changed or shifted, because, yeah, you're right about them putting the disclaimer at the beginning, because that wasn't in the first couple of days, and it happened later. And I think there were too many people doing it. And as you said, even allegedly serious moviegoers, those who are immersed in a film or documentary, were somehow finding, like, it was just like subconsciously they were doing it. And I really hope, like, Mammy, if next year sort of, you know, take strict action against such moviegoers, because it's just not acceptable. Like, you want to do it, you do it, like, because you want to record the audience or a standing ovation or audience reaction to Shah Rukh on screen, that's a very different thing. But that's part of the movie watching experience. You're not supposed to record the movie, goes without saying, but during a film festival, it's all the more shocking. But yeah, anyway, that's sort of out of our way for now. What have you been your sort of most memorable experiences this festival?
I think my first film, if you don't count the Almodovar short with which I started, wasn't too partial to that, but my first feature was Portofu, which was just a great way to start because it's such a watchable film. It's just so much, warm vibes and just a beautiful looking film. And that was really nice because it sort of eased you in. It got a very, got a big name also out of the way straight off, which is like eases the pressure a little bit. And just a very pleasant experience to start off with. That was a good one. Fallen Leaves, as you'd mentioned, we saw that together. That was also an enjoyable one. Good start to the day. I saw this film called Fremont, again a first screening on one day, which was a good surprise to me because it was at Sundance and it was really highly acclaimed out there, and I could not see it. I'd done some Sundance viewing, but that was not one of the films that was available to everyone. So I had a nice chance to catch it out here, and that was really nice. It's sort of like a Jim Jarmusch kind of small black and white nice comedy there. So that was again a really nice thing. That was a good day. I think then after that I went to Hong Sang-soo, which is another very different kind of small drawn from life comedy, and then there was A Fire, which was one of my favorite films of the festival. An excellent film by Christian Petzold. A wonderful performance by this actor called Thomas Schubert, whom I don't think I'd seen in anything before. And just this exceptional performance. And he plays this really malcontent writer who's trying to finish this novel and is having all kinds of trouble. And he deals with all that trouble by just becoming an asshole to everyone around him. And it's just, I think all the writers in the room were watching that film very differently from the way everyone else was. So I think it was a very personal and very triggering film for a couple of us, and for the rest it might have been a really different kind of film. It also, I think one of the other reasons that I really like it kind of had shades of Burning, which was really one of my favorite films of like the last 10 years, I would say, and one of my absolute favorite mommy watches, Lee Chang Dong's film. And this had something of that kind of great unease that even when something's not really, there's nothing particularly wrong per se, there's this feeling of a kind of simmering unease and like there's something going to go off. And It's just a really, really interesting film, I thought, and a fantastic lead performance. This guy, Thomas Schubert, was really, really good.
Burning, which is otherwise known as a film I went to sleep in. and I never really got around to giving it a second chance or giving myself a second chance to like it, because I think Burning was the fifth film of my day that day. And those who are listening, like, just believe us when we say it really matters when you watch a film during a film festival, whether it's your first film or your fourth film. And, you know, now I think over time we've learned to sort of figure that out and make schedules accordingly. Like, you might have heard Uday mentioning a couple of times that he started his day with certain films like Potefu or Fallen Leaves or something like that. And that really matters because your mind is at its freshest then. And it really helps to start a day like with a film like Potefu. I remember it was my second or third film. I was a little wary by then already. Thankfully, I'd eaten and gone inside. And I traveled a lot that day. So for me, the experience wasn't as pleasurable as, say, someone who might have had it as their first film. And these things matter. We are human. It's difficult to make your way between films at a film festival. There are a lot of factors you have to take into consideration. So, you know, I'm glad you mentioned Afire because it came down to a choice I had to make by the end of the festival between Afire and Perfect Days, which is Wim Wenders' film. And I chose Perfect Days because my unsaid rule was if anything is suggested by Uday, I go with the next film. It didn't work entirely because I really regret missing A Fire because I love writer films. And everyone had good things to say about it. But I am very glad that I managed to catch Perfect Days, which is, I think, the Japanese entry for International Film Oscar next year, and that's the least of its things. It was a spiritual experience for me. It was probably my best at the festival this year. It's just about a man, a toilet cleaner in Tokyo, and him going about his days, and it has such a different gaze of loneliness. And I know we tend to see a lot of films about urban loneliness, a lot of bleak films. Wim Wenders totally turns that on its head and, you know, like, asks whether loneliness is the same as solitude. And it's just one of those films that you can keep watching. You just don't want it to end. And there's a lot. It's very profound in its last act. There's a lot to take away. One of the best performances. I think it was Best Actor at Cannes. And so, you know, I can't recommend it enough, Perfect Days. I don't know where it's going to drop eventually. But, you know, as Uday said, A Fire, and for me, it was Perfect Days. So I'm very glad I ended my film festival with Perfect Days because I didn't have it in me to watch another film and sort of dilute my entire warm vibes I was having after Perfect Days. Again, I loved seeing the faces coming out of the film and everyone was moved in a very bittersweet way. They didn't know whether to be happy or sad, and that's a very rare thing. So for me, that was, I think, my most memorable moment this year.
I'd have really liked to catch that. It just didn't work out somehow. There were too many clashes somehow with that particular film. Strong reco from Rahul for like people who are maybe attending other festivals later, Kerala, IFFI, Calcutta, I guess, probably Chennai also, all of them, I think, in the future. So possible, if you can, then try and catch this film. I'd recommend the other Wenders film also. He's had an excellent year. It's a documentary called Anselm. It played in 3D at MAMI, fantastic film, art documentary. So if you're into that kind of stuff, then you may really enjoy that. So both the Wenders films, something to look out for in the future in case you're attending any of these festivals. What else? Can I just dwell a bit on the Q&As that we did, because that was a first for me at MAMI. Same. And I really did enjoy myself with all of those. I spoke to two Iranian directors, one Jordanian and one French, and it was just it was a lot of fun. The films were The Siren, which is this Iranian film about the Iraq-Iran war, animated, really beautiful, evocative kind of film, really well done. It's obviously like a sort of harrowing war film, but it's also has this slightly, you know, this sense of adventure, and it's about a young boy, so it's a kind of coming of age story, and it has that slight expanse and a slight maybe Tintin kind of quality also to it, along with being like a serious kind of film about that war. So very nice, really really good film. I would recommend that if people can catch it later. The next one was called The Dreamer, French film, character study, kind of slightly deadpan, very interesting. There was a Jordanian film called Inshallah Boy. I really like that film. It has a kind of Farhadi-esque quality to it, in that it kind of it's like a very pragmatic look at how you know, a certain social problem can then lead to another. In this case, it's the inheritance rights of a woman who's lost her husband, and that the house doesn't go to her, and instead it's going to go to her husband's brother, and that's the law out there. And the film is how she's trying to circumvent this some way or the other, and just a very like a very tense, really well acted film. The actress named Mona Hawa, she's in the lead, Palestinian actress. Really, really good. I that's a film I would recommend if it plays somewhere else. And one of my favorite films and screenings of the festival would be Celluloid Underground, which is this documentary by Ehsan Khoshbakht, Iranian director who lives in Europe. And he's made a documentary about this man who used to live in Tehran, and who used to collect reels of films when it was illegal to do so, but he did it anyways, and he would lend them out for screenings, which Ehsan himself as a young man used to do sometimes in Tehran. And he just built this massive collection, but as a kind of pirate. He didn't he wasn't allowed to do it, and he'd like sort of hide them from the police. And it just a fascinating story. So great essay film / documentary. So those were a lot of fun, and it was it's weird to be on the other side moderating these things, because usually you're, you know, if you're not running for the other film and you manage to catch some of these, then you're kind of groaning at the audience questions and stuff. It was fun to do some of these, and
I mean, for me, Q&As were very different. I think I sort of envy you that you could do them with like one director, one filmmaker, because I was curating the short film packages, and every package had like 6 to 7 films, which means at least 5 directors were attending. And I did the Q&A and the press conferences for 2 of these packages, which was basically one was themes of loneliness and love and depression and mental health. The other was mostly experimental filmmaking. So I was mostly speaking to 4 or 5 filmmakers at once, which was a little tricky, especially if it's technically not Q&A, then you're doing a panel more or less, and especially after the film. So, but I was very happy with the selections we made in the short film section. For those interested, you know, there was the focus on South Asia this year, and I think and I was part of the programming sort of for the non-features. And we saw some very fascinating films. 26, 27 were selected for the festival. One of my favorites was a short film called Goodbye Hello, which is by Omkar Phatak, who's also the guy who shot Against the Tide, which won the Golden Gateway this year. And it's Harmonic Cause documentary, which played at Sundance, won there 1 year. So Omkar Phatak has also made a film called Goodbye Hello. It's just the most disarming short film. If you ever see it on any platform in the future, please do watch it. It's just about a ghost on a terrace in Bombay. And the ghost is very old school ghost in the sense of wearing a bed sheet, and it's just, and the entire film is in subtitles because, you know, there's no language, and it's about a little girl who goes, it's about a teenage girl who goes to the terrace, starts having a conversation with a ghost in gestures alone. And it's one of the most innovative sort of short films I've seen in a while. And we really enjoyed it. So that is my record as far as the non-features are concerned. Speaking about the terrific Iranian films, whose Q&As you did and whose films you enjoyed, so let's speak a little about And Towards Happy Alleys by Shrimoy Singh.
Lovely film. Why? Do you want to give us like a brief thing? We went into that also with not much of an idea of where things were going. So yeah. there's a fantastic appearance like literally 5 minutes into the film, which we were laughing because it was just, I mean, we heard the voice and we were like, oh shit.
And it was a lovely little tribute, right? Like, I mean, there were so many tributes within the film. So for those, you know, who will look out for this film in the future, it's called And Towards Happy Alleys. It's made by Indian filmmaker Shrimoy Singh. I think she was doing her PhD project. And I think she spent a lot of time in Iran, couple of years at least. And she learned to speak Farsi. She very much immersed into Iranian culture. And her entire project revolved around the history of Iranian cinema. And the crossroads it's at right now, given, you know, all the problems, you know, happening right now, and given all the sort of censorship issues and how Iranian cinema has progressed over the years and its famous filmmakers, of course. So it's technically an outsider's sort of view of it, but it does not very much feel like that because Shrimoy, it's also a voiceover-ish film. She has a voiceover going on over it. It's her reading of Iranian cinema, how it inspired her to do this project and spend so much time in Tehran and in and around Iran. She, as Uday said, a lovely bunch of cameos by a couple of famous faces in Iran. And we won't spoil that for you, but you might have guessed, given that Shrimoy also uses a very familiar method to shoot a film. And it touches upon a lot of things. I just thought it was very, very elegantly made. It was really sort of self-contained and very also managed to be personal, not just cultural. It was very much Shrimoy's gaze of how Iranian cinema, how Iranian cinema has inspired her, and not just sort of Wikipedia-ish, sort of informative documentary on what Iranian cinema. How difficult it is for filmmakers to voice, to have a voice there these days. So I think she's done a fantastic job of it. I think there's some lovely moments in the documentary. There's no point really speaking about it because it might just spoil the surprise when you do eventually watch it. But that's definitely a reco in terms of nonfiction. And as we know, you know, Indian filmmakers are really outdoing themselves in terms of nonfiction over the last couple of years. And Towards Happy Alleys is another lovely example of that. We mentioned Against the Tide, but I didn't watch it. So, but it did win the main award. This is another, you know, name in that collection.
I really also liked that Shrimoy Singh. She actually went and kind of made a documentary in another country about another country's cinema and literature. Yeah. It's something that Indian directors are very reluctant to do, and which directors abroad have no problem with at all. You see directors from all over the place go and make films somewhere else. You had Walter Salles make the Jia Zhangke film. You had like Asayas go to Japan and make, I think, the Ozu film or whatever. So it's like it's all over the. They travel all over the place there, and it's just, you know, if you're a fan, you're a fan. And I liked that an Indian director decided to go, and of course she did like the extra work of learning Farsi and doing it properly. But it's nice to see that ambition, and also I wish it would happen more because you see a lot of foreign directors at times come and, you know, make films on Indian subjects, which is often interesting because you get a very different gaze, and it's nice to see an Indian go abroad and do that, and it's something interesting does come out of it, and a film definitely worth checking out. I don't know whether it can land up online at some point, but that would also be very nice. I think it would have a nice little second life amongst like cinephiles if it did turn up somewhere. I'll just talk briefly about two screenings that really I think were probably my favorites as far as the screens are concerned. The first is this film called The Battle. Both of us saw it, though separate screenings. It's by a director named Vera Egito from Brazil. It's all long. It just unbroken shots, just a series of them. They are numbered. It's a interesting stylistic device. It tells a story of one night and a pitched battle between students of rival universities and the police that is supporting the posh sort of semi-fascist side, and the other students who are the camera mostly stays with them, and it's about how a bunch of characters are doing during this night, and it's quite something. It really has that revolutionary spirit. It's the technique is amazing, but also I was very taken in by the headiness of the atmosphere. It felt very much like how things might be out there. There are a lot of things happening at once, and there are a lot of people flying off the handle, and it feels very accurate to me as to how a group of young people would be sort of losing their heads but also trying to kind of see the night through, and I thought that was a fantastic one, and it was very nice to hear the director after that speak about the film, because it was obviously a small budget film, but what they have pulled off on that budget is quite extraordinary, and what she said was that it was one of the main reasons that they could do it with whatever budget they were that they managed was they compromised on time. They said that they will so they I think she ended up shooting it in 13 days, which is quite amazing if you look at the film, but that was the only thing they could bargain with, because they needed I mean
Because
they
they were
needed
shooting
whatever small
also
budget
into
they had.
16 mm, right?
It was on 16 mm, and they again so she said that there was no place in all of South America to process that film, so it had to be sent out of there. So that again was going to cost. So the only thing they could really economize on was time. So they had to rehearse it, and then they had to be kind of perfect. So they'd shoot like three or four setups in a day, and which is really, I mean, difficult to imagine because they are really complex setups. And she basically said that, you know, if it was like the whole building had to act at one time, even if the camera was in one room, because things are happening and the camera would be moving to the other one. People had to be in motion. There had to be a whole scene unfolding in another room, even if it wasn't happening. So quite fascinating. I really like that screen. The other one I really liked was something that I had seen as part of the selection, and then I was really keen to see it on the big screen. Animated film, Chinese animated film called Art College 1994. Really cool film. It is set at the Chinese Academy of Arts, and it follows these very Linklater-ish characters who are Linklater-ish in the sense that they're kind of inarticulate and but also very philosophical at the same time. And I enjoy that contrast and just beautiful animation, very naturalistic, great details, and a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. I think and the screening went well. I mean, there were a few walkouts, but I think the people who stayed back really liked it, and they stayed through the end credits, and just a really nice screening. Directed by Liu Jian. Excellent stuff.
Yeah, so interestingly, there were a few walkouts during the battle that you mentioned. But those who stay on, at least in my screening, were, you know, very, very happy by the end of it. Because, as you said, interestingly, it was the only Q&A I attended through the festival. I'm very glad I did, because the director was very eloquent. I think she mentioned the same thing she did as she did during your screening. But I'm glad she did, because, you know, the entire thing of the trade-off the filmmakers made during the film, shot it in 12 instead of 28 days just to sort of afford the 16mm stock. It was all very, very informative without, like, really, you know, listing down things. And it was a very rewarding screening for a lot of... And I noticed there were a lot of filmmakers during that screening as compared to normal sort of cinephiles. Because I think by then the word had spread that that this is a proper sort of, this is one of those purest experiences in terms of filmmaking, in terms of the craft. And on a low budget, especially for independent filmmakers, I think it was her first film and she came up with it like 12 or 13 years ago and she finally made it. So just to hear about her process, there were some very interesting questions asking her how she shot on 16mm, how the technicalities behind it. So, you know, you learned a lot after the film as well. Great film, you know, 21 long takes and all. For those, as Uday mentioned, and, you know, for those who do manage to catch it whenever they do, you're in for a treat. I missed Art College, I regret that. But a couple of others I'd like to mention. It goes without saying that the only time I broke down in a theater and wept was Ken Loach's new film, The Old Oak. It's the only time I went to Regal this year. And I only went for a morning screening on a Sunday because it was Ken Loach. And I wanted to continue the tradition of watching it at Regal because that's where I watched his previous two films at PAMI. Both times, like, I think the seats were soaked with tears. And you know, funnily enough, this time I wouldn't want to ever compare his films. The Old Oak is just, it's a British small town. It's about a pub called The Old Oak. It's about a pub owner and Syrian immigrants in that town and, you know, sort of their relationship, their choppy relationship with the locals there, who are very racist, as they tend to be these days. So, and the pub owner is the protagonist and he's far more gentler. He's a typical Ken Loach character. He's one of those sort of non-professional actors whose face is so kind, who's seen life, and who is very much not acting so much as living. And it's just a very moving experience. Great film. And I noticed a lot of men in the theater really sniffling by the end of it for some reason. I don't know why I noticed men around me crying and not women. I don't know what that was. But I think everyone had a very emotional experience. And everyone knew that they were there that morning to sort of, you know, just expend all that emotion while watching the film. To Ken Loach's credit, you know, 87 still going strong, telling very relevant stories without really collapsing into these crowd-pleasing tearjerkers. Old Oak is one of them. I really enjoyed The Animal Kingdom, which is a French sci-fi film. It has some very famous French actors in it. But I think the most remarkable thing is about the film is that, you know, it's technically a creature feature, but, you know, it never really feels like it, even though there's some lovely sequences, you know, about with sort of humans mutating into animals. That's the premise of the film. And it's a father-son story at the core of it. So I think that track was handled very well, even though there are times you don't know really where it's heading. But I think the film did a very good job of not being pigeonholed as a genre movie alone. There was a lot more to that than meets the eye. So I really enjoyed that one. And another one, Uday, I think you had record this to me, and I'm glad I watched it. The Breaking Ice. You want to say a couple of words about it?
That's a really cool film. I regret not being able to see it on the big screen. I'd watched it earlier. And just by Anthony Chen, a name that would be familiar to mommy goers who really liked, I think, Ilo Ilo when it had played back in 2013, I think. This new film from him, it's a Chinese film. It's set in the snow, in a very snowy city. It's sort of about this trio falling in and out of love. It's a little difficult to kind of get to kind of describe it. It definitely like a relationship kind of film. For me, it was just the image making in it, some of the imagery, and was just so striking to me. Yeah. And this very kind of amazing contrast between these really cold, austere environments and this very tempestuous sort of relationship that forms between these three people out there. It is quite a striking film.
It was, for me, definitely most striking audiovisual experience of the festival, because it was hypnotic to watch, because I remember going in without really knowing what it's about. As you said, you know, it's about this Chinese town at the border with Korea, and these three, one girl and two guys, and that's about it. It's just spending a weekend together. The man is a loner from Shanghai, one of the urbaners, and he's not sure what to do on this trip. He's a little sad, the tour guide that he meets, a Korean tour guide, is the girl, and her friend is the third wheel in this whole thing. And he's in love with the girl, and you know, it's just about them doing things on the weekend, having fun, spending time together, coming of age in their own ways. Lovely film, so many striking visuals, as you said. There's a wonderful shower sequence in it. If you ever end up watching it, you will know exactly what I'm talking about towards the end of the film. And it's really nice to see that, you know, even now, you know, watching a film can be all about your senses, especially in terms of this film, because there's not much of a story to talk about, as we mentioned, and it's just very much made for the big screen. Glad I caught it, and it would be remiss not to mention one of my favorite crowd pleasers of the festival, Humanist Vampire Seeking Consenting Suicidal Male. That is the title, if you don't believe it. It's just such a fun film. It's, of course, it's about a humanist vampire seeking. It's about a teenage vampire and she's just is does not want to kill people to drink to get her blood. And there's a suicidal guy. She goes to the suicide anonymous group, finds a suicidal guy. He falls for her, decides to, you know, sacrifice himself for her. And it's just very much a rom-com in a sense, and very quirky film, very Tim Burton-ish film. You know, very deadpan family that she has, fun parts of it. And I think, little anecdote here, because why I enjoyed the film so much, because I think at least 11 or 12 years ago, me and a bunch of my friends made a short film. This was before I got into film criticism, writing about it. And that short film was about a vampire in Bombay who had the same issue. He did not want to kill people. He was a little more tender than the old school vampires around the sort of roaming around the city. And so he goes to blood banks and graveyards and decides to sort of get stale blood from like wherever he can, sort of scavenging around the city. And his problem is that he's in love with a human girl. And eventually it's just about a clash between him and an older vampire who's very brutal. It was more let the right one in then humanist vampire, because humanist vampire is more of a comedy, but this was more of a drama. And there were so many scenes in this film that reminded me of that short that we made so long back, because it has the same thing, you know, drinking blood from a straw and being so like casual about it, and you know, figuring out very innovative ways to feed yourself and nourish yourself in a in an environment full of humans. I'm just very glad that genres like this still exist, because you can run out of ways to tell vampire stories, but the tone is what matters. And I'm glad, and as you know, as luck would have it, my producer, the producer of that vampire short all those years ago, was sitting right behind me during this screening, and we hadn't met for a long time either. And after the screening, he came to me saying, we were sort of ahead of our time because these same images were in our film. It's just that the tone was different, as was a thriller or a drama, and this was a comedy. So it for me, it was a very nostalgic experience watching this film. I can't recommend it enough if you ever do find it somewhere. And the title is one of the fun, you know, it's one of the funner titles of the lineup this year.
Yeah, it's just, it was nice to be back in Bombay watching all these films, like, and having the same issues that one has. When does one eat lunch? What is lunch? How many coffees can you have in a day? It was just a lot of fun, and there were some issues that did come up during the thing, and I hope some of them got ironed out for the people who were doing the morning bookings for the first time of our attending Mami, or at least mine. I didn't have to do those, so that's nice, because it gives you an extra hour. I'm really hoping it kind of, there were no major enough snafus that things can't continue next year, and I thought the selection was very strong. There are obviously big films that weren't there, some of the TIFF films, obviously Poor Things not there, and Zone of Interest wasn't, and a couple of others, but I thought the selection was very strong, and I'm just happy to be back. It was good.
Yeah, no, same here. I'm glad we did a pre Mami podcast, because we didn't really know what we are in for. I didn't know what to expect. You're right about the selection. It may look weak on the outside, but I think when you're in the festival, you have more than enough options to watch many films. I think a lot of us discovered films while during the festival, taking recos from other people. It was really nice to see familiar faces, whether from the film industry, from journalism, regular sort of moviegoers. I am in great admiration of all those who came from other cities to watch Mami and watch 5 films a day for 8 or 9 days straight. Hats off to them, because, and I very much understand that. I used to do that for the longest time, but I was living in Bombay. I don't think I have the stamina to do 5 films a day. I think my maximum this year was 4 or 3. I don't know, but I didn't go on a rampage this year because there were a bunch of other responsibilities. There were whatever little stuff was expected during any festival. There were a lot of spats between the public and organizers outside screenings because, you know, of the half an hour time limit, because the seats weren't getting filled, because the VIP section was shut off. But, you know, these are regular things that happen at most international festivals. And I think at the end of the day, it really sort of, it matters. A 9-day festival is different from a 6 or 7-day festival. And we were just glad to be back. And you're right about the food and the, because I was still a little jet lagged. And by the time the festival started, I'd lost all perspective of food and meal timings and meals. So there were times when I hadn't eaten till 6 p.m. in the evening. And this one moment I will never forget out of pure shame is when during a screening, I don't remember which film it was. It was, I think, 5 p.m. I was in the screening. And the woman sitting next to me looked at me with shock at one point, middle of the film, because my stomach was growling. And it that just happened, it was
that
so
happened
dull.
To me on stage, which is even worse.
The mic must have amplified it.
I was really, my first question when I got off stage was like, did the mic pick up any of that? Because I think it was during the siren screening. Yeah. That, yeah, it,
it's a less embarrassing sort of gas, but it's still gas, and it was that was a very good reminder of how I was just maybe an hour or two away from blacking out, maybe. But thing about, you know, going through these festivals is you somehow find the resilience in you to do things.
Shout out to Zico Ghosh, our friend from Bombay time. From my time in Bombay, Rahul's still there. But yeah, and Zico's now in Cal, but he came down for this. Yeah. And in the first day in one of the screenings, he decided to open a biscuit packet, except it was dark and he couldn't seem to do that for 10 minutes. We could hear Zico in the dark fiddling with a biscuit packet, and he was getting shushed by people, which must be mortifying for him, because usually he's the one who keeps shushing people in order to create the perfect viewing conditions, but the biscuit packet defeated him.
Yeah, that I can imagine. And I heard a bunch of people struggling with their food in the theater this time. But yeah, all of this adds up to make what a film festival what it is. And I'm glad we met all of them. Zico, and there was Bhaskar again. There was Paulomi, who came from Goa. There was Ishita, as usual. And Aditya Shri Krishna. All of us caught up after a long time, too. We managed to get a few nights out. You know, pre-pandemic, we never knew it would take 4 or 5 years to catch up again. But glad to be back. So, you know, thanks to Mami for that. And next year, we hope for a bigger, better festival also. This year, for, you know, those who've been listening, thank you for that. Do note down the titles we spoke about. There are a bunch of others and lovely lists made by a lot of cinephiles on Twitter and Facebook who've gone to Mami, watch way more films than we did. So, you know, don't take our word exactly. But these are the films we really enjoyed this year. And we hope that, you know, it'll be the discourse sort of continues through well into the next year when the new festival season starts. We will hopefully be back next week talking about the new Salman film, new Tiger film, Tiger 3, directed by Manish Sharma, which has basically means back to regular programming. The film festival season is over. Uday also, I think me and Uday did manage to watch the Martin Scorsese film, but we will be discussing it maybe down the line, because I think Uday is planning to rewatch it due to some sound issues in his first screening. So stay tuned for that. And we are nearing the end of the year. So as you know, we'll be speaking about our favorites through the year. Thank you all for listening. And we hope you, those of you who attended Mami, had a good Mami. Those of you who are looking forward to films, you know, enjoy yourselves, write into us. And happy Diwali, because it's just around the corner. And we will be back soon. Take care.